All right, we are live, so we are going to call to order the City Council work session for Tuesday, June 9th, 2026. We're going to start with topic one. It should only take about 5 minutes, and then we'll hop into topic two regarding ARA. So we'll start off with Colleen on discussion regarding implementing online benefits.
Thank you, Mayor, members of council. As the council will recall, last summer we received permission to start automating HR processes through a few of the functions with NeoGov. That included core HR, eForms, Onboard, and Perform. We had already been using Insight, which was the recruiting module. All of those modules have, we've gone through the training and they're up and running. It's going mostly well. The last portion of the online HR processes is the benefits module. NeoGov benefits, after looking into it, is not the route that I would recommend. It's expensive, it's labor intensive, customer service, and ongoing labor to keep it up and running. As we have learned from others, that it's cumbersome and not that employee friendly. However, we do have another option, which I highly recommend. It is going with a program called PlanSource, administered through Integrity Benefits. I have personally worked with Integrity Benefits for over 10 years and had excellent, excellent customer service. And used a module similar to the PlanSource several years ago. However, much improvements have been made since then. It's still the current staff we're used to working with. We have had a great experience up to this point. And with Integrity Benefits, rather than $9,810 the first year and $6,351 the second year, it is $5,760. There's a few nuances that I don't know that you'll want me to spend the time going into on that, but it is my recommendation, my HR team's recommendation, and Brian Hagen is on board with going with Integrity Benefits to bring this process online, away from paper forms. And as far as the funding for this, as you may be aware, HR recently will be taking in about $10,000 additional revenue this year as a result of assisting with the QCTV Executive Director of Recruitment. So for the 2026 funding, we've got it covered as well as additional, although I know it can't be transferred into 2027, we would include that funding into the next budget for online processes for employee benefits. There's additional benefits with Integrity, and that has to do with the 1095 reporting, which is necessary for the Affordable Care Act. I would pull that process away from the current vendor and bring it in with Integrity Benefits. After all, they'll already have our data. I like that, keeping it in one place rather than two. And with the Integrity Benefit program, we can do an upload into JD Edwards, which is our payroll processing. And so with that, I'll stand for questions.
Questions? Appreciate it. Dan?
Thank you. So my understanding correctly, first year 98, second year around 63, and then what are the years after that? Is that the 5760?
I could barely hear you.
Oh, sorry.
Year is 5,760, and it's actually by employee count, so it would go up a couple of dollars per employee per month. It would be...
That was the NeoGov price.
Oh, gotcha.
What I'm speaking of is the 5,760 is through Integrity Benefits. It's a module called PlanSource, and it is $4 per employee per month. And so the figure of 5,760 is based on 120 employees, which is approximately what we have right now. So incrementally, it would go up a little bit, although still significantly less than NeoGov benefits, which we could expect 5 to 7% per year.
Saving money, that's always good. Anyone else? Good. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, on to item number two, consider support of gap assistance loan and assumption of mortgage agreement for ARA sports facility project.
That'll be me.
Thank you. That was good.
Well done.
It wouldn't be a meeting without technical problems.
Oh, no, it's no problems. It's just that I got too many screens up and I can't get the right one up there. So. We'll be there. I think we're good now. Do we land? All right. Good evening, City Council, Mayor and City Council. Excited to be here this evening. This is a project that we're all very familiar with, and we're going to kind of give you an update on where we're at and where we might go. So project is the same project we've been looking at for the last couple of years, and it's still a 100,000 square foot athletic facility on the south 10 acres, or 10 acres south of Highway 10, and it's still a $13.43 million project. End of April, City Council had consensus for support up to a $2 million HRA loan based on some preliminary financing that was put together by the bank. We've since started work on putting together the redevelopment plan and associated documents. However, we're still holding back, kind of looking for that final confirmation of the financing. So with that, on June 1st, we actually received the financing proposal from the bank. And unfortunately, the proposal came back with modified terms and different funding ratios and requirements, and I'll get into those. But I think first and foremost, I want to start with kind of where we're at now, and I want to talk and let ARAA talk a little bit about kind of their project, the work that they've gone through to get to this point, their submittal to the bank from a pro forma standpoint. I'm going to put some things on the screen so you can kind of see kind of where they're at and the potential success for this project. So, get down to here. So, I'll start toggling through slides here, but this I'll let Dustin take over right now.
Okay. So, this slide here is essentially what it's going to cost us to run in place every single year, down to the nitty-gritty, the small things. Obviously, the biggest portion is going to be debt service. At $65,000 a month, so it's going to cost us about $131,000 a month right now. That number is pretty stagnant, no matter how many people we have in and out of there. That's what's going to cost us to run this place. Is this, $1.572 million per year. We built in some overages in there to make sure we maintain the place, to make sure it is always going to be state-of-the-art. We refuse to let it become decrepit and downtrodden. It's going to be nice all the time. So we built things in there. These numbers are probably actually a little heavy because we went heavy on them knowing that, right now we're volunteers and we don't want headaches. We want to make sure this place is going to work. So this is like a worst case scenario number for us, $131,000 a month. And this is just the expense piece. There's all kinds of stuff that I can get into when we get to the next slide on revenue. But this piece is the number we have to hit every single year to break even, is $1.572 million in revenue to break even. And so here is the breakdown. We broke it down into occupancy rates because we want to know where do we have to hit to break even on these numbers. And so you can see in the bottom right-hand corner is if it's only 25% occupied, we lose $220,000 a year. Anybody who's involved in youth sports, anybody who does youth sports training and goes to these facilities knows that 25% is, if you don't get 25%, you are doing something terribly wrong. because you can go anywhere, anywhere you want around town, any of these sort of training facilities, and there are going to be people there till 11 o'clock at night, every single night. And then you can see we bump up to 50% occupancy if we make $1.1 million a year, over that 1.5. So that would be a profit of $1.1 million a year at 50% occupancy. We think a reasonable number is probably in that 70% range. We can probably hit that 70% occupancy based upon all the conversations that we've had with outside groups, based on our own youth sports experience. I mean, I've spent so much time in gyms watching how this all works and watching how it spins, and just with my own kids competing and seeing these things. And that is just the rental piece. That is just rental revenue. That's what the profit will be on rental revenue. The breakdown to the left breaks down some other pieces, other sources of revenue for us. Naming rights facility, where we put it about $200,000 a year in naming rights. That is about the market rate. Elk River, they've got their new facility up there, the plants and things, or furniture and things. I'm not sure exactly what it's called. They name an arena, like I think one arena for like $100,000 a year. We've got site-related gambling. So the big picture of this facility is it will have all kinds of retail going in around it, restaurants going in around it. There will be two restaurant pads in there. We anticipate, based on our gambling experience, to make $200,000 a year out of those gambling sites. There's electric rebate. So Conexus gives every single commercial business in town gets a $30,000 rebate every single year. So we plug that in there. It's only $30,000. So in the big scheme of these big, huge numbers, it's not anything. But we've considered all these sources of revenue to make sure every stone is not remaining covered up. There's a lot of things we haven't considered, or we haven't fleshed out the numbers on yet. One is I have a call into Cedar Creek Solar right now. I'm putting solar on the roof. We have 2.5 acres on the roof, and it's just going to sit there doing nothing. So if that's a source of revenue for us, we're going to do that. Concessions rental. So a lot of these, like I know, like Willie's in Champlin, they rent out the concession stand. I think at one of their local parks, they pay a fee to rent that thing. So we could do it ourselves, or we could rent it out to somebody who wants to professionalize that and rent it out for more retail, for more rental. My eyes are getting older. I know this stuff. Without the climbing gym, there's a local group, I'm sure you've heard of them, who wants to put a climbing wall in town. There are no buildings in the city of Ramsey that are tall enough for a climbing wall until this gets here. So he wants 50-foot walls. We'll have a 50-foot wall. That's a source of revenue for us, too. That's got to get fleshed out. He's got to figure out his pieces, but it's there. That's like a, and we are having a hard time quantifying how much do you pay to rent a wall. It's not traditional square footage where you know what you pay to rent square feet because that's flat. What do you pay to rent up? So we'll have to come to some sort of a, I don't know how, we'll figure it out, but that's a weird thing. So there's a source of revenue that's money there that we don't know exactly what it is, but it's not zero.
Batting cages.
Batting cage rental is in there. That's going to be, thanks Josh for that, for the assist.
Read for you.
Josh doesn't know anything about basketball, but Josh, that was an assist. No, you're a wrestler. Batting cages will be in there. That's probably going to be $50,000 or $60,000 a year just to have cage rental in there, because you're already going to have the space there, and then you just drop down these nets. Like banners, internal like sponsorship rate, we put about $125,000 a year just on the court space, court and turf. So $25,000 a year to name a court, $10,000 a year to name a piece of turf. Or I don't know, I think I got that backwards. But so $75,000 for three pieces of turf, 25 each, five basketball courts at $10,000 a piece. That's $125,000 a year in sponsorship revenue. That doesn't include any of the banners that will be up in the ceiling of this place where people pay a fortune for that stuff. There's a marketing group we've talked to out of Maple Grove, Prime Marketing. You can hire them on, and they will fill your space. They'll take a percentage, but they fill your space with rental with sponsorship dollars. So I know there are people who like have named a drinking fountain in an arena, and they pay $2,000 a year to have your logo on the drinking fountain. You can do the damn spec, whatever, you know? So there's all the different. Yeah, drink fun. You want to name it?
The guy's raffles.
Yeah, you're open. Those are already saved for somebody else. So there's all, like, that's the non-rental revenue stream that we know is there, that is achievable for us. So even if we're at 25% occupancy, if we hit all those other numbers at 615, we more than break even. So, like, is there a risk? There's always risk. You know, I understand that there's always risk. The biggest piece for us is that the bank doesn't have someone that they can tie to this thing personally. And so that's why they look at the numbers and they love the numbers. And it all makes sense, but we're weird. We're a nonprofit. We understand that. And that's what the whole piece is we don't have that personal guarantee to latch to this thing. So that's the revenue numbers. That's the profit numbers. If 25%, we will not be anywhere near that. We will be so far over that.
Just with our sports alone, with the 10 sports that we have, we're going to have rental from within area. Again, we had volleyball. I think we lost 10 teams, or we didn't. We could have built 10 more teams for volleyball. But we wouldn't have court space. So those are real issues that we're running into, and those are stops for us from growing, because there's just no place out there. And volleyball went out and said, "We'll prepay for the year. We'll pay you ahead of time. We'll pay you 6 months ahead of time and get this court space," and nobody has it. So there's a real need out there, and just within our organization. So I think there's. Even that 25%, we're going to hit a lot of that just within our organization. So
right now we rent roughly $300,000 a year in outside space. So that's 2.5 months of operating this place just on our own needs that we already pay outside. It would be coming home. So anything that's in Anoka, that's at a school, is coming here. Everything that's at a church is coming back home. All that rental revenue is going to come home. And honestly, like, those places are not going to hurt for space, because there is just a dire need for training space. So people are going to come in and swoop behind us and go to wherever that we're renting that we're not going to be renting anymore. Yeah. So, like I said, we already pay for about 2.5 months of operating costs at outside rental as it is right now, just in that $131,000. We pay, if it was in a mortgage assumption, at $300,000 a year, we pay almost 5 months of just that obligation to Core Trust Bank and space we rent already outside of our organization to other groups.
Cool.
I'm happy to answer as questions as well as I can. And
John, do you have anything else, or?
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I do have quite a bit of information to go, but this would be a good time to pause if you do have questions regarding operations, to ask them now, and then I'll get more into the numbers on the city end of things and what's changed and what risks are and things along those lines. So however you want to do it.
Questions?
So if you do hit your 50 to 70, then any extra monies will be paid down early to extinguish that loan early?
Yeah, that's our intent. I mean, we don't want debt. We're a nonprofit. We can't stockpile cash. We can't just leave it in a bank. You have to spend it. So be paying back loans to others. That HRA loan or EDA loan, I'll pay that down quicker, and things like that. And also, like, this is phase one. We would also like to start investing in phase two. We don't think that this is enough space, based upon, like, every dome around town is 100,000 square feet and they're full all the time. And this is going to be unique. This isn't a dome. This is a hard structure where you can do anything year round. Shanna?
Yep. Just curious about the actual facility. I know one of the things that when we were looking at doing a community center or something, a lot of the residents were like, we want an indoor walking area in winter. Is this something that during the appropriate hours would be like court sizes enough for those people? For the adults who want to walk indoors?
Yeah, kind of what we anticipated, how to do that. We've thought about this a lot. Like, we live here and we understand this is like a pseudo community center, kind of. You know, it's weird. It's a weird project. It's super unique. But one of those is letting people in. So, like, Andover, the community center, if you're an outside resident, you pay, I don't know, $5.
Yeah, $2.
And if you're a city, if you live in Andover, it's $2. So we would do something like that and have, you know, I would love to get some, like, senior programming in there for in the mornings to do. Have people come and teach classes. Have come do yoga classes. Come walk around. Come do these things. I mean, Were we in here about the last meeting? We were in here and we were talking. We were at the EDA meeting and you were there. And it was so fascinating to me because it was senior living was there. So you're talking about like end of life stuff. And then we came after them and you're talking about like beginning of life stuff. And like the same things that are happening in the city right now, it's really interesting to me. So I feel like we encourage those people to group together. So like we do pickleball. So for us, it's a generational thing. Like we have older members of the community that come back and teach these little kids. And it's really good to bridge all of those kind of gaps and stuff, too. So we do want people in there. I mean, the more the space is used, the better off for everybody. Dan?
I have another question.
I thought I saw your hand. Kirsten?
I think this is great. I think that sounds like people agree that we need a community center. Maybe more space on top of what we're building. So I just want to reiterate that and put that out into the universe since we just talked about that, right? But this alone for your organization is great. So thank you guys.
Yeah, I think eventually if you figure out the walking trails and things of that nature, that would even help even with your sponsorship dollars, the more people in there. The more those sponsorships are valuable. Chris, do you have something?
I don't have my head up. Are we going around talking now, or I understood we had questions for operations.
I don't have questions.
No.
Any other questions? All right.
Okay, thank you. So I want to provide a more in detail project financing update. So again, we received the proposal on June 1st. The proposal is attached to your case. I'm not going to go through every item in there, but the first option that was presented to us was to rezone the property to industrial and do a 60-40 split. The bank's rationale behind that is that a industrial building is a more marketable asset, thus reducing their risk. That's why their 70-30 went to 60-40. Everything else would remain the same as far as the term of the loan, 5 years, 25-year amortization, just a different loan to value. However, staff did look at it, and you know our comments were the rezone is really not practical with the surrounding uses, putting an industrial building in the middle of a retailish type area. And frankly, we could potentially get nicked for spot zoning if we try and do something like that. So the staff consensus was 60-40 split is just not financially feasible either for ARA. So we took that off the table for those reasons. Option two is, I think, what the council will be considering this evening. Again, it's without a personal guarantee, but trust me, there's going to be some backing, and the way it's structured, it would be from the city. But still, loan value 70-30, and generally speaking, and I'll show it again later, the financing is what you saw before. The caveat is the city's on the hook to assume the mortgage if in the event that ARAA defaults, which is an entirely new wrinkle to this, and you need to be aware of that as a council. Again, bank and city loans, 5 years, 25-year amortization. City doesn't have an option to assume the mortgage. It will be required to assume the mortgage under this scenario. And with that, we would get ownership of the building and the real estate for that. So within that assumption, ARA would relinquish all rights. It would come to us. Nothing changes with the proposed HRA loan and the cash by others coming into the deal. And last we spoke, ARAA had not deposited $10,000 in cash, but they have now, so that's going to help fund some of the work that Mary Opal has done to start working on these redevelopment documents. So this right here is the proposed financing structure. It looks very similar to what you saw last time. However, what I highlighted is the area of risk for the city, which is the city being required to assume this ARAA mortgage in the event of default. And if you look at we'll wait until I get to it. That's the old financing, in case we want to look at that. So kind of where the rubber meets the road, and I think really items that the council needs to achieve consensus on is option two in the details of this. And if there are things that we feel that we missed, we'll certainly feel like we can add them if there is an appetite to move forward. So again, assumption of mortgage agreement in the event of default will be required. So we're obligated to make payments on the existing mortgage or refinance. As it's structured right now, it's about $65,000 a year for that 5-year period. We would not be responsible for anything during the month. Thank you, Chris. It would be $64,000 a month total plus $768,000 a year. And that would start after the project is built and the construction financing is taken out and then the permanent financing is put in place. So that's when we come into play. If things don't happen the way they, or we all think they might. In the event that the default happens within the last 6 months, and this is important, because if we do need to step in and that five-year mortgage matures, we're going to have to go get alternative financing, and we're going to need time to do that. So the bank has said, yes, we will offer extensions at the same rate to just extend that interest only until we can take our permanent financing in play. Again, part of the assumption, and we've talked these over with ARAA and their attorneys have looked at it as well, there's no obligation by the city to lease or sell to ARAA at some point. There may be a relationship afterwards, but under the assumption agreement, we wouldn't be compelled or required to do that. ARAA waives the right to resell to another entity other than the City of Ramsey or EDA while the loan is in place. So that means, like, let's say year three, they have a buyer coming in. We basically have first right of refusal on it. And then if we decide to move forward with this, the city will work with financial advisors and the city attorney to draft an assumption of mortgage agreement and other related documents that would be necessary to kind of protect the interests of the city, or at least make sure we understand how everything is going to go. And again, at the end of the day, the city under this scenario will become the owner of a 100,000 square foot athletic facility building. And the city or other users will have the right to use that building as zoning permits. Potential uses, obviously an athletic facility, that's what it's built for. It would make sense that that would be the use. Indoor trap range is an idea. That would be a very unique idea that probably would be very popular in this area of the woods. And then, as we mentioned before, community center or aspects of a community center. Want to bring this up again, and we'll get to it on the next slide, but after that five-year period, or if we assume it earlier, and I hope we don't, but if we did, we'll need to refinance that loan on or before the five-year loan maturity. And when we do that, there will be general fund impact, unlike the $2 million HRA loan. And on the next slide, I'll kind of go over what that might look like. So I just want to qualify this page here first. We were looking at five-year loan, 25-year amortization, typical city bonding, and here we're using at least revenue bond example, which is probably one that would probably be applicable here. What I did is I put together, I didn't put together, Diana put these numbers together. And these are the debt service numbers only. So there's also additional costs that would go into getting the debt, the cost of going out for bonding and all of that stuff. But this is just debt service. So if you look at it, I ran it at both 6% and 5%, so you could kind of get an idea of what the annual payments would be for the city and then what the monthly payments would be for the city. So you can see, for example, 10-year, you're looking at about $100,000 a month for debt service. But as it goes into longer term, those obligations go, but again, you're paying more interest over time too. So it's kind of a horse piece. So we can go back to these slides, but what I think we're looking at this evening is a couple of ways to go. Council consensus agreeing to this new financing structure, which is totally different than what you've seen before. And I'll mention it again, there is a risk. The risk is default. We are on the hook if, for whatever reason, they don't make their mortgage payments. Now, within that assumption agreement, we'll probably put things in place that would, we wouldn't find out 6 months from now that they haven't been paying. We'll know right away. So we'll be able to kind of get our arms around that in the event that something happens. And again, I hate to talk about this because I think if they hit their numbers, this is going to be a huge revenue generator for the city. It's going to be awesome. But we have to look at it if it doesn't work. So back to that. Again, assumption agreement is required, ownership facility, ability to operate, sell or repurpose, refinancing 10, 15, 20 year, whatever we decide is best. And ultimately, if the consensus is to move forward with this, we'll have to get to work with Ehlers and the city attorney and other folks to start working on what the bonding would look like or what our financing would potentially look like. We wouldn't do that, but we'd kind of need to understand that and then put together an assumption agreement that outlines what our responsibilities are. The other option is we kind of hold to where we're at, and we've agreed as a city to provide $2 million in an HRA loan, up to $2.3 million in total cost into the deal. We could try and find others to guarantee the loan in the private sector. That's another option that we could do. I mean, we've been overturning every single rock to get to where we're at right now. So I don't know if there's any folks out there, but again, if there's not an appetite to go with the new financing structure, these are other alternatives. And then lastly, you know, it's just wait for something else to materialize, likely led by ARAA to do that. So with that, that's a lot of information, so I'll take questions. But,
yeah. Questions from the council?
So, I know that they spoke on being more community-minded and being able to have community members come into the house. While we're under this five-year piece of being the assumption or assumer of, can we have something in writing that makes sure that they're actually going to use some of the facility for community pieces that aren't just for sports or, like, children sports, for like the walking path or the, I don't know how it all works, but does that question?
Councilmember Stewart and the rest of the council, absolutely. We haven't really contemplated what a use agreement would look like, but that would be something our city attorney or others could look at and put together. But I would think that with us kind of stepping in, if we do step in to essentially backstop this loan, that I would have to think ARAA would allow us to have many opportunities to get our residents in there and work it as a, I don't want to say quasi-community center. There's so many other things. But, yeah, I mean, I can't speak for Dustin, but I would have to think that we could find something.
Yeah. We would sign that.
And I think we'd have to be, you know, we'd have to talk about it a little bit more. I mean, if we're renting out, I mean, I could see a need for, like, a weekend where we have a boat show or an RV show coming in, where they're going to take it from a Friday to a Sunday. You know, I mean, those kind of things have to be, we have to make sure that we work those things out so we have the ability to rent this to its extent, because the bottom line is, if we make it, everybody wins, right? So, yeah, I think we're definitely for it. And it's always been talked about as part of wanting to be more, you know, kind of a quasi-community center. So I think that's important, but we just want to make sure, like I said, boat, RV show, they come in, and what they'll do is they'll rent the facility from Friday to Sunday or Friday to Monday. And we want to be able to make sure that we have that option to do that as well. So I'm absolutely for it. I think it's important. I just want to make sure that we can make money, because we need to make money to have this thing go.
Dan?
Are we kind of in discussion time? Or?
Questions, discussion, yeah.
I guess thinking about that, in my opinion, you know, I realize that we're kind of guaranteeing a loan, so we have some skin in the game, but I want them to be successful, so I guess as a city, I wouldn't want to tell them necessarily, you know, let us do this or this or this. I want them to be able to make as much, it's not about making money, but making as much money, having as many kids in there as possible to stay, you know, that's what it's about, is that the kids that they're helping, and I wouldn't want to force them to do something that we want them to do that would then take away revenue to pay the mortgage or to do other stuff. But.
Chris?
I agree with Dan. This is their business venture, and they're already helping the community by doing it. And I would like to reiterate, if we are seeking a community center, then we can build it ourselves.
Can I say the one piece about the community center piece?
No.
So kind of the way we envision opening the doors to the community is, like, kids are at school all day long. Mm-hmm. So why not weekday mornings? Like, we're not going to have tons of stuff going on their weekday mornings. So, like, weekends, I mean, we are agreeable to figuring this out and, like, signing something. And I know it's going to be something, like, if we want everybody to win. Like, there's no win. Like, we're not a winner in this, and the city loses. The city's not a winner in this, and we lose. It's kind of an all weird, big, huge partnership. So, like, we want people in there in those downtimes on weekday mornings. Like, that's kind of how we see. And that's when seniors are going to use. Seniors don't want to be in there when it's full of five-year-olds, I don't think. My parents would not. So...
Other questions? So the way I'm looking at this is, it's a net benefit to the community. Brings an amazing facility with services for the residents. And once again, I don't think you'll have a problem hitting your even 50%. But if worst case scenario were to happen, my understanding is we would own essentially a 13 $0.5 million building for essentially $9.5 million?
We assume $9 million because there would be some slight pay down along the way. And remember, we also have our $2 million loan that's in there that, we'll, if that happens, we'll probably forgive it.
Sure.
We're pay ourselves. Well, we could, but...
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, in my opinion, this is a win in either direction. Obviously, we want ARA to be successful, but if worst-case scenario played out, the city would own a valuable property for a fraction of the 70% of the value, essentially. So, I mean, if somebody needed me to guarantee a house flip, and if they defaulted, I owned a $400,000 house for $200,000, I'd make that deal every day. So, I feel this is very similar. And I think it will be a boon for the local economy. A lot of residents coming in here from all over the state, from different cities, as well as benefiting your own city as well. So, less of a question, more of a statement. But, Chris.
We're moving into statements. I'd like to do that.
Go ahead.
Well, obviously, we all support this. That's why we're sitting here. That's why we've already offered up $2 million. However, had we started at the beginning saying the city needed to pony up $13 million, 11.5, 9.5 plus 2, however we want to talk about it, if we would have said the city was going to pony up $13 million, I don't think we'd still be having the discussion. And if it also meant that the city was going to own this, we also wouldn't be having this discussion. So I'm uncomfortable with us getting there now. This transaction contemplated puts all the risk on the city. The bank is accepting no responsibility at all here, which I have a problem with that the bank is potentially going to be making the money, but yet they have no risk, no skin in the game. You guys are a nonprofit. I appreciate everything that you guys are doing. But we're talking about resident dollars here, and we're talking about dollars that we don't even have, that we would potentially have to go out and borrow or find or whatever. It's not like, well, we know where it would come from and it would make it kind of an easy transition. I think we need to look at this professionally, and I'm looking to the fact that three different banks, bank groups, bank, you know, boards have looked at this and they have a problem with it. I totally believe everything that you say. I totally do. And I'm sure you've done the same presentation to the banks, but they have problems with it. And each and every bank, three different banks at least that I'm aware of, have problems with it. So I think that we have to be very skeptical about that, or figure out a different way of looking at it, or how a banker that does this for a living looks at it. Then lastly, I think the nightmare would actually start if we own this building. Now we own a building, and what do we do with it? And I don't think it would go over really well if we kick ARAA out when we've all said, lauded on them how important and what a great service you're doing to our community, but we're kicking you and all the kiddies out of their new building. So that's not going to go well. It's putting the city in a very precarious position. I fully still support this and trying to find a way that the city can help. We've already allocated a lot of money toward it to hope to make this go possible. There's maybe other things the city can push or other financing ways that I would like to have the city explore. But I'm against what's being proposed.
I appreciate everything you're saying. I would make a counterpoint, though. I think I would still be in favor of this if this was the story from the beginning. If the city had the ability to assume essentially a $13.5 million building for $9.5 plus the two forgivable $2 million HRA loan, I think we do have to be cautious with taxpayer dollars. I totally agree with that. But I think it's a prudent move to essentially assume a property that valuable for the price that we would assume it at. I think it would leave us in a pickle, as you said, with what do we do with it. We could continue renting it out to ARA, which I think would service the city still and would still pay for itself. we could turn it into a community center if we wanted to, and I would agree with that. That's not the best option because that's not something we've actually pushed too far of a part of a discussion. But I think when we did talk about a community center, wasn't the number like $20 million or something? It was a very large number. So I know $20 million was quite a lot for us to assume, but if we could have a pre-built building for $9 million, that would be pretty great. And then lastly, I guess a question for the staff. If we assumed the mortgage, would we be able to sell it to another institution or break it up into smaller stalls and do something that way? Or what could we do with the real estate if we owned it and we decided we didn't want to operate it?
Mayor, council, I think it would depend on what we did. So if we were in a situation where we just assume the mortgage and made payments, we wouldn't take ownership at that point, I don't think.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we would. We would take ownership at that point. It gets a little tricky, I think, when you determine what type of financing we use when we ultimately do the takeout financing. So there might be some certain restrictions depending on the bonding or the revenue source that would limit our options or make some options taxable and some not taxable. But that's kind of, you know, what the last step here is to direct staff to work with Ehlers and city attorney just to kind of iron out those details so that council would understand fully what their options would be depending on what financing option we chose. Even though we wouldn't be taking the financing out unless we needed to. So it would be basically kind of say, here's one or two options of what you can do in the event of a default and you refinance it. So, and again, we didn't go into that at this point because, you know, generally speaking, like a lease revenue bond is something you would typically see for a building like this.
So we could sell the building at the end if we took
absolutely, yeah.
For a profit. But obviously assuming that the evaluation is still.
Yeah. I will say though, I under the scenario that we're doing with the HRA loan, I would guess that the EDA might be the owner of this building. And by EDA being the owner of this building, that makes it much easier to sell as well.
Right.
The process is way simpler.
Matt, you have something?
Just to play devil's advocate, we have Wood 5 where the pickleball and sound waves is down there. That's an 84,000 square foot building. The shell alone on that was $9 million with no finish. That has a 28 foot clear height. This has a 50. It, you know, I know I was involved with Dustin and Josh on some of these talks, and you know, we've all been talking together. One of the things a bank is like going to a hard building, it has a second purpose. It can be a warehouse if it needs to be. I mean, if you look at the price to lease square footage, I don't think that price for 100,000 square foot is out of line because our $9 million shell is a two-year-old price, mm-hmm. and things haven't went up in the last, or haven't gone down in the last 2 years. So I think it's in line. I don't think it's crazy. Just from my perspective as building industrial buildings, especially building a hard building with a 40-year outside finish that, you know, you won't have to touch. It's got a 40-year baked-on finish, right, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, it should be maintenance-free. There should be no leaks. It should be everything perfect. I think there's, hypothetically, worst case, if they don't make it, there is a fallback item to go to.
Yes.
And the second thing, just from PSD, this is a great use of that property. We've sat on that property since 2010, 2011, waiting for the right use. We've had crematoriums wanting to come. We've had auto dealers wanting that site. This is, I don't like throwing other cities in, but let's call it Blaine Sports Complex Light. You know, it's not as in, you know, 50 soccer fields like the Schwann Center is, but I mean, this will drive traffic. If you guys have kids at the USA Soccer Cup, it's nuts.
And yeah, that's, thanks for that input. That's kind of what I was thinking is, worst case scenario, we own a building, we resell it, and we make a couple million dollars. So We may have to flow interest for a year, and then we make a couple million dollars on top of it. So,
like a public works building, a storage building. I mean, take half of it. Yeah, I mean, you've got options. It's a very, the building, I think it's Butler, right?
The Butler building, yeah. It's free span.
I mean,
no,
that's where they build these big monster combine storage with those, you know, I mean,
yeah.
it's a big structure.
Shannon, you had your
hand up? Yep. If we choose to go down this route, the rental pieces such as the solar on top of the roof and a few of the other pieces, not quite the batting cages, but however that money works, is there a way we can have a clawback or something in that should they go into default that we would automatically start getting those funds or whatever those funds were? Or how, I mean, I know the electrical one or the solar panels would probably be the easiest one to, like, now you will be giving us that solar put money, right? But is there a way to, like, somehow get some of those extra revenues to come back to if they default?
Yeah, Councilor Stewart and the rest of the council. I'm going to defer to the city attorney on this one, so I'm going to throw her under the bus. I'm not kidding what I'm saying, but I'm sure she has more experience in this area than I do.
So, to answer the question, potentially, although I'm not sure why ARAA would agree to that, because they're going to need to have some revenue sources absent this building to be able to continue to operate as a nonprofit, and so that would be part of a negotiation. But in terms of what revenue streams we're able to take over, that would be part of that assumption agreement that we would be doing, and what all is in it and what isn't.
So we could write in the assumption agreement we get the solar panels.
Sure, we could say that if it's affixed to the building and it has a revenue source related to it, it's ours. If it's not affixed to the building, naming rights really wouldn't be affixed to the building.
Right.
Exactly, those would go with that. So there would be some division of the value of the assets, if you will, and the agreement would specify how they split out.
Follow up. Chris?
So I just agree with everything you said earlier, where if this was what came in front of me the first time, I would have said yes to it, and that obviously, it's a community asset. It would be an asset to the city, whether we kept it or not. And everything you said was good.
Eric?
Does ARA have a board of directors? Would you be open to have someone appointed from city council to sit on that board of directors, since we're assuming some risk in this?
We have talked a lot about the governance of this building specifically. We're going to have our own governance board for this building. So the way we work is we've got, I don't even know, so many sports. Let's call it 11 sports. Each sport has got its own board of directors that's underneath our umbrella. This facility will have its own board like that to make sure that everything's in. Like, there will be a CFO on there or a treasurer or whatever. So I think those are the things, like, I think we've talked about who are these people going to be? You know, like, we want people who have a vested interest on our side of things, but also that bring a different perspective into things that we don't always think about. Like, I'm in my tunnel all the time. Like, we've been doing this, like Sean, for 4 years, so I see like this. So, but we would like to have somebody in there from the outside to kind of stand on that board. Now, the big board, we call it the big board, our overriding body. Anybody in the community is free to run for a board position on that board. And we don't have any at-large positions. So if you want to be on the board, you might be doing grilling hot dogs and stuff. But then...
20 years.
Yep. No, that's, so, like, but that's the way I envision that. Like, somebody from city council could run for that. We would have to talk to our attorney, too, about changing bylaws to do something like that, to have, like, a city council seat or a city at-large position or whatever you want to call it on there. But
would you be more interested, are you talking more of if we create a separate board for just the complex?
I think
have someone on that
since
board?
We're assuming the risk of the complex, I think the city council, I think the city at large should have
that would make more sense.
Yeah, just to have either be able to hear it or have a voice. since we're assuming risk. I think that they would feel more
cool.
Liaison. Yeah, so an ex officio or something like that. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking, is like an ex officio non-voting member or something, just for transparency's sake.
At least you could come back, if it was you, for example, you could come back and have a discussion with your city council, like, here's the things that are going on.
Give updates.
And like your meetings, like our meetings are open to the public.
There's a lot of like doom and gloom coming out of this conversation. I want success. I want to find success in this. And I think that if we have some visibility to it, I think it provides some sort of.
Yeah. Sean and I had the doom and gloom conversation of putting this together last week. And I did not sleep that night. I just was so anxious about it.
Oh, yeah.
And then I woke up in the morning, and then you look at those numbers, and like, we were just talking the worst case scenario. I understand the city's risk as a taxpayer. I get those things. I understand the responsibility you guys hold as a vote. And, like, I want to also be clear, like Chris, like, we weren't trying to pull a fast one. Like, that was not this financing structure. If we would have known that this was always going to be required, we would have brought that day one. You know, and it was, we have unturned every possible stone. And we have run every avenue that there is to run to get here. And we've done all the homework and all of those kinds of things. So it wasn't like, as you as someone who I respect, to know that we weren't trying to pull anything tricky or fast. Yeah. So, and I don't think you were saying that, but I felt the need to say that. I think we would be agreeable to having someone come on in.
External monitor.
Yeah.
Okay, real quick, and then I'll go to Diana. Is there any legal conflict of interest with the voting member versus non-voting member if there was a ex officio spot?
Potentially, there could be a conflict of interest if they're voting. If they're non-voting, then that probably solves 99.9%.
So I would just suggest that. Yes, Ms. Lund.
So I just want to make sure that council's aware what this does in regards to levy. That if it does not go through in regards to financing, just so that you know. And so the first 5 years, it would be adding about the $770,000 onto the tax levy, because we can't just go bond if there's a six-month notice. It would have to be like the levy for that next year then to pay back. And then in regards to the balloon at the end, you're looking then at probably the 12 to 15 million that would be levied. And that is strictly based off of the principal only amount right now. There still is the underwriting cost of probably another 1 to 3%. And you have to levy at 5% above and beyond over it, you never collect. So you're looking probably anywhere from another 1.3 to probably 1.5 on your levy each year. So I just wanted to put it out there. And, of course, it is a risk, because we went through that. We didn't get any gambling proceeds for a couple of years when we went through COVID. So there's always those risks. And I'm going to throw out there, I always think of the Venice Heights one that went under, and they're still dealing with it today. So I just felt that being the finance side, I have to present those items to the council.
That's good. Other questions, comments? Chris?
Well, thanks for bringing up the Badness Heights. I mean, that's the poster boy for why cities should never be involved with this, and that's where I'm glad ARAA is involved rather than the city. But yet, it's coming back to now us discussing if the city would be, you know, potentially in that spot. It was a terrible disaster, it still has lingering effect. And again, I'm going to point out the fact: three different banks, people smarter than us with money, have said no, and we all think it's a great idea.
That's good context. The Vadnais Heights debacle, is that a dome? That's a dome. So that's where I'd probably say we can hedge against that. We could resell it as industrial or things of that nature as well. So I understand it's a debacle. I think the fact that it's a dome is also a huge part of why it's a debacle. I think there was foresight into that, switching to a hard structure.
A little bit more. The developer was on the Vadnais Heights Council. Bigelbot was a council member, and he got paid to build the dome. So there was also an issue there. So.
Face is great.
And I will not be building this
construction.
And Chris, three banks didn't say no. Nobody said flat out no. Everybody had little quirks and stipulations built into this thing. It wasn't like flat out no, we're not interested. It was some of these things were a 60-40, and we canceled that. or it was we need a $5 million personal guarantee. We can't find someone to do that. So it wasn't like flat out, this is a terrible project. It was just kind of like this, with all these little nuances to it. And it was little things that we found out after. You know, it was, I mean, it was essentially like, if you guys were a private business, we would say yes today. If we were, there was, if you were on, if you could guarantee this thing personally, we would say yes today. So well, I just wanted to like clarify, it wasn't hard, it was flat out no.
Technically, in a second, Chris, did it all?
All that.
Yes, Chris. Councilmember Riley, we technically were the second no because they wanted Jim to finance or guarantee $5 million of this project, and we were the no. So we're going to guarantee 10. But we wouldn't get it back. We would just be getting out. Yeah, we wouldn't get it back. We wouldn't own it. We would just be on a guarantee.
Anything else? Shannon?
I think that was one of my big problems in the beginning was it was going to be a guarantee event, or like the other banks were talking about the guarantee, where it didn't sound like it was going to benefit us as well if they should fail. Where this way, if they should fail, like you said, we can actually sell this thing or rent it out, or however, I think there's more probability of succeeding as a city because we are assuming it versus just guaranteeing it. So that's where I've had a change of thought process on that one.
Oh, Michael.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The numbers that you're throwing up for revenue and all that, I assume they come from with some backing of what your historic.
Yeah, it's so those numbers, the rental revenue, that's based on what we do, the number of, when we announced the first time we tried to do this, we announced it and we heard from 75 people within a 24-hour period of wanting to rent space. And one person was, I want to sign a 15-year contract with you for $200,000 a year. And so like those are the backing reason. And there's a large athletic facilitator who does baseball, basketball, and football. They're out of Spring Lake Park. And basketball, they do all summer long. And they want to come in, and they're like 7 weekends during the summer, which is, that's good. That's really good. We want people in there in the summer. We're not worried about wintertime. We want people in the summer. So they've said they would come in and bring in, I don't know, 100 teams 7 weekends during the summer. Now, nobody's going to sign a letter of intent until we have, it's like the chicken or the egg, right? Same thing with naming rights. Okay, this thing's been lingering forever. When you show me your site plan and site plan approval and you put a shovel on the ground, we'll give you naming rights. That's what it's going to be. So the same thing with rental revenue. We have these relationships that we've built. I've been in my position for like 11 years. So you get to know communities all over the place. When there's a youth basketball tournament in the winter, like we rent at 3 different locations. We're at the high school sometimes, and then we're at Lord Life, and then we're at the middle schools. Every other city's like that too. They're spread all around. They'll come over here and rent to get it all under one roof.
And these rental numbers are very consistent with other places around that do something similar.
So like the rates are the same, or
yeah,
generally the same as the neighboring, whoever else is doing this in competing areas.
70 teams on a weekend also equates to about 700 families. Is that math? Mm-hmm. Is that math thing? Mm-hmm. 700 families that are going to need to eat and go shopping and find stuff to do. So.
And we'll space them out.
Yeah.
We'll do another rail hour. I did it when I was going up. Sorry, you guys got to cut your teeth, and you're going to have to go every other hour and sit for an hour or two. And then you're going to go out and spend money at Jimmy John's or whatever neighboring retail is over there.
Yeah, it's a good way to support business. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Dan, you had your hand up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I guess my thought on it as well, you know, looking at the worst case scenarios, you know, there's been a lot of discussion, which I'm not in favor of doing a $20-plus million community center, but the worst case, that's what we'll end up with. I mean, a cheaper community center that we could then utilize and do what we want. So it's not like it's out there, and it's not something that we haven't discussed. You know, we didn't have enough votes to do it, and I still don't support that community center, but in a way, I think that's the worst case scenario with this, is we'd have something like that, and, or we could sell it or do something else with it. So the risk is minimal.
All right, for the interest of time, do we have a consensus to bring this forward? All right. Looks like we have consensus to bring it forward. Option two. Option two, right? That's the one that was suggested. Yes, Sean?
Mr. Mayor, Council. So, moving forward, so at this point, are we, and this might be a question for the city attorney, do we need council action to start working on documents to do the assumption agreement, or are we going to start working on that with the bank right now and then bring those documents to the council to get approval? Because we are going to be spending money in order to do that. I just want to make sure that we're comfortable doing that. Now, we did set up the this HRA redevelopment area as such that, you know, we have an additional $300,000 in funds that we are looking at, and those would be eligible costs to put together these documents for this particular project, I believe, utilizing those funds. So it's not like we'd be going to general fund, but we would end up going to general fund in the event that we get through this process of docs and then for whatever reason we hit an impasse and we don't do the project, then we'd be on the hook for general fund dollars to pay for whatever expenses we racked up. And so just wanted to bring that to your attention. So I want to know what my direction is. Are we going to turn Ellers loose, or are we going to start working with the bank and say, all right, let's start getting ready to close and get all the docs ready and move and have the HRA loan documents put together? Because that's kind of where we're at if we're going to move forward now. I just want to make sure I'm clear.
So the two options you presented is fact-finding mission, bringing that information back to the council before we do anything official, or just start working on it right now? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. And maybe what would you suggest?
Well, I think the question is, we would need clear authorization from the council if you want us to start spending money right now. If not, then, and if that's not something you can give us right now, then we would need to come back at a different point, or we'd be asking for that exact thing. We need authority to start spending money. I think we're at the point where there isn't a way to move forward on option two without spending money, because it's a matter of negotiating with the bank, negotiating with ARAA about this, and developing the documents.
And we have the funds. We'd only risk losing them because we already have dedicated money through HRA. The only way we'd lose that fund is if the project fell apart and then we spend money that we couldn't use the HRA funds for.
Yep.
Can we authorize in a work session, or does it need to be
I don't think so.
So what you'd be, you can authorize it, we can spend money, but what you're not authorizing is these documents. Those have to come back before you to be approved officially, right?
Yeah.
And so those would be on a presumably probably a consent agenda item or whatever they're going to be in a regular meeting. But staff goes and spends money all the time,
right
on things that you've directed us to do. In this situation, though, we want to be very clear, we have to start spending money.
Yeah. All right, I'm okay with that. Okay, so
start working on documents?
Start working on documents, and then I guess for ARA, if you want to look into like a non-voting ex officio role for the building site board, that would be great.
Yep.
And then maybe if you can come back to us with some ideas of like community involvement, like during the non-peak hours where residents can utilize that space, that'd be great.
Yes.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
All right. Item number three, review of existing and proposed fiber optic service providers within the city of Ramsey. City attorney, I think you're taking this one.
Just to go to the audit report first, because that was in the agenda. It just started at 6:30.
Yes. So we are going to skip three for now and go right to the audit report, because we have our guest here, and it will be a part of the city council meeting. So we'll put three on hold for a minute, go to four, which is review of 2025 annual comprehensive financial report, management report, and special purpose report.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here tonight. A little longer presentation for the work session. It'll be really quick at the meeting if you want it to be. I'm going to just flip through the slides here. I really felt the audit went pretty well this year, a smooth process with the team. being fully staffed this time, I think. So that was nice. And really just go through what we have here for the audit presentation. As mentioned, the three documents, the ACFR, the Annual Comprehensive Financial Report, the Special Purpose Report, and the Management Report. And then the slides are simply some of the pieces we've grabbed out of the Management Report as we've done in the past. So I'm sure you know our role as independent auditors to provide you the opinions, and the financial statements is a document prepared by the city. It is the city's document. We're providing that opinion if we agree with that it's fairly solid. So I'll move to the next slide, really to get to the results. And you can see I can move pretty quickly here. We've issued an unmodified or a clean opinion on the financial statements that they're fairly stated. With internal control and compliance over the financial audit, that's with regard to your audits completed under government auditing standards. And we have no instances of non-compliance material weaknesses to report to you, and no instances of non-compliance to report this past year. And the next slide, I'm pleased to report we had the same thing. So there's seven broad categories of testing involved with the Office of the State Auditor's Legal Compliance Manual, and we had no findings in any of those individual areas that we tested for and completed this past year. So I know some of these slides get pretty difficult to read. I'll hit some highlights here. So the first slide, we're looking at your governmental funds. So I'm not including your utility operations. As you can see here, we're including then like the general fund, your special revenue funds, capital project, any debt service funds. Big picture overall in the governmental funds, you saw a decrease this past year of $1.9 million, broken down with the largest reduction in restricted assets, and that was due to a couple of reasons. The spend down of some proceeds and assets that were in the pavement management program with projects ongoing this past year that were restricted last year. There was also a transfer of the core fund that went from park improvements to the park improvement fund. So you see a shift there, and if you look at the lower half, you'll see a reduction in that core land fund, but an increase more than offsetting that decrease in the park improvement fund. The general fund operations, we've got a few slides here. We'll get into a little more detail, but as you can see, there was an increase of about $1.1 million in the unassigned, which is very close to the increase you reported in the general fund. The next slide really shows the result of your stable operation for several years, the growing size of the city with activity ongoing, and fund balance policy, keeping that fund balance at that 50% requirement where you've been the past few years. And I'm not sure if I remember you not being there. Your policy would call for a drawback where you transferred. But again, positive operating results, and you had that annual fund balance transfer out as planned in that policy. The next slide we look at is the revenues within the general funds. So really the comments I noted here was that general fund revenues, the size of your operation, you're over $20 million now, $20.7 million coming in favorably, as I'd say, over budget in total. The variance was largely due to conservative budgeting for development activity as well as investment earnings. So they can traditionally be difficult areas to project, and you're difficult to ever hold anybody accountable for it. The property taxes, as you can see, make up the primary funding source for the general fund, which is not unusual for Minnesota cities, and thus the need for your fund balance policy to get through that first half a year of operations before you get any significant collections. But for your city, property taxes make up about 80% of the revenues for the general fund. A similar slide for the general fund expenditures. We break those down by the function where the spending is occurring. You can see the general fund public safety being the primary spending component, which is typical with cities we work with. As you can see, each of those categories spent within their approved operating budgets this past year. The expenses this past year totaled about $19.3 million. And as I mentioned, coming in better than anticipated, again, under budget. So shifting gears, we've talked about the governmental funds, so now we're looking at what are known as your enterprise operations, business-type operations, or utility funds, referring to the same thing here. Similar slide as we started with the top half showing the components of equity or net position for your enterprise funds. You can see the overall increase of about $10.6 million. You can see the heavy weighting of utility operations on infrastructure in order to operate those entities with most of the equity. You can see here the split of $112 million is in the investment in the infrastructure to deliver those services compared to the remaining net position of $26 million. Overall, that increase, you can see going into the capital, that investment in capital. So with your planning and the operating results, you've been able to make those investments into growth and expansion of the systems, improvements with resources on hand. The lower portion shows you each of your utility operations, and you can see all of them with positive operating results, with the exception of the recycling fund, which just reported a slight reduction overall this past year. So still positive operating results in that fund, but something to keep an eye on, you know, for if there were ever a long-term trend in that area, making sure you're comparing rates as would need to be. And the next slide is impossible to read on a graphic here, but it really shows just the operating results of each of the utility funds. You can see it better within your annual comprehensive financial report. We've tried to keep your report simple and the management report with putting them all on one page, but you can see the overall operating position of each of them. Again, that recycling fund looks a little bit worse when you look at this page compared to the previous one, but that's probably by design because that fund also receives governmental grant to help offset costs of recycling. And then my last slide for you is the presentation at that entity-wide level. So we have a dual perspective presentation, which is more meaningful for the governmental funds than it is for the business type activities. The business type, as I mentioned, is your utility operations. Because you're operating them as a business, they're meant to be self-sustaining, so they are on that full accrual basis of accounting, and it captures the cost of the capital, the long-term debt associated with that. When we talk about your governmental funds, that is on a current financial resources measurement focus, and the focus there is how many dollars you have available to provide services to your citizens and taxpayers in the city. But what we miss then is that long-term impact. What happens with issuance of debt, pensions, your infrastructure for streets. So that gets captured at the entity-wide level. You can see at the entity-wide level, again, your city saw an increase there on that top half. Again, another heavy infrastructure with the importance of city streets and the involvement with that, and the largest increase going into that component, which is also impacted by the pace that you pay off your debt, which generally occurs at a much faster pace than the life of the city streets. The restricted decrease, as we talked about with that payment management program, spending their restricted resources, so that's relatively consistent with what we talked about at the governmental fund level. And again, then everything falling to the unrestricted after the first two components are calculated. So that improved position of the general fund falling right to the unrestricted category there. So with that, you've received the ACFR award for several years. I can't even remember, is it 41 years now? Or
32.
Okay. So many years of receiving the ACFR award. It's been presented again in order to submit for the award. There's a lot of information there. I went through it pretty quickly here, so if there's any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer.
Chris.
Thanks, Mr. Nielsen. Ms. Lund, whichever one, but like the water fund had a pretty healthy increase this year. Is that going to change with the water treatment plant now?
That's why you see the increase in the capital assets, because the water treatment plant is what we spent to date is on there.
Okay. But then even the operations showed a pretty healthy increase. Is that going to turn around now?
Well, the operations will probably keep increasing depending on what expenditures are going to be related to running the water treatment plant, because we have not had a full year on that, so that I believe it just went live this year, so that has not been incorporated in there.
So there'll be a larger depreciation charge.
There'll be a large depreciation, and then insurance, and just the daily operations of that. So you'll actually see an increase in operations for water.
Any other questions? All right. We're looking forward to the presentation during the council meeting. Good job, Diana. Good job, everybody. Yeah?
Thank you.
All right. So we'll see if we can get number three done here. Review of existing proposed fiber optic service providers within the city of Ramsey.
Mr. Mayor, council members. So I'm going to be tag teaming this case with City Attorney Johnson. I'll kick it off, briefly discuss some additional information that we think would be important for council to understand. As you recall, on March 24th, we brought this to council, discussed a proposed Gateway Fiber 2026 fiber build-out project. On your screen is a copy of a layout of the entire city. So on the bottom right-hand corner, the southeast corner of the city, in that orangish color, that is what Gateway Fiber is proposing to build out this year. It would be a fiber optic to the premise build-out project where all of the homes in that area would be served or able to be served with fiber optic systems. We also talked about some right-of-way permitting and construction requirements that staff recommended back on March 24th. At the time, council's consensus was that they agreed with those requirements. So what also was a little apparent at that March 24th work session was that some of the council's comments made staff realize that we should have made it clear at the beginning that there are already numerous areas of the city that are being served or are able to be served by fiber optic systems currently. So we already have two fiber optic service providers in town, that's Comcast and Lumen. So on that map, all of the blue shaded areas are areas that have those utilities, those fiber optic private utilities already in place. So those premises are either being served or can be served by fiber optic. So at present, our staff's understanding, and we've been tracking fiber optic systems since 2024 specifically, so trying to build our own database. But to the best information we have at hand, there's about 1,700 residential homes that have access to fiber and about 37 businesses that have access to fiber, as demonstrated on the blue shaded areas on that layout. There are several magenta shaded areas down in the southeast corner. Those are areas that are currently served by Comcast or Lumen and are also proposed to be served by Gateway Fiber in 2026 as part of their build-out project. So that's just a quick update on the existing fiber optic systems that are in place. Again, two service providers serving over 1,700 or able to serve over 1,700 residential premises and 37 businesses. As far as just a quick update on the Gateway Fiber project, we are reviewing. We've had three right-of-way permit applications submitted. We have reviewed all three. We are working with Gateway just to make sure that they're fully compliant with all of our construction requirements and permitting requirements. And we are very close to issuing the first two permits. As you may recall, we're limiting it to two permits at a time, no more than two, trying to kind of hit the ground walking rather than running making sure that things are going to go well as we move the project forward, very similar to how neighboring cities have done it around us. So that's just a quick update, and I know that City Attorney Johnson has some information that she'd like to present on possible work on a franchise or license agreement.
Okay, I will go fast. Thanks. Since you're working on that, we're recording, so I am having a perimenopause issue currently, and my husband should be outside those doors. I will need to use this chair to leave the room.
Sure. Do you need help with anything?
Yeah. I'll come back for the stuff, and hopefully I'll be clean. Present about broadband franchising and how franchising works for broadband. So the biggest question is broadband considered cable or is it considered telecom? That is really the answer or the question that the council has to answer, and I'll get into how you would make that analysis. If you determine that broadband is cable, then we can/must require a franchise agreement and work with QCTV Cable Commission to do that franchise agreement based on our current JPA with the Cable Commission. Just a reminder that the underlying city's goal in relation to broadband is to protect the right-of-way, city infrastructure, and to ensure that there's fair and adequate access for all the residents. Couple of key terms to keep in mind right away. ROW is the public land that's underneath the utilities. A franchise agreement is the contract that allows the installation and operation of cable within the right of way. The city has a franchise agreement with Xfinity and with Prism. They are both administered and enforced through the Cable Commission. A right of way permit is the city issued permit, so that doesn't have anything to do with the Cable Commission to work within the right of way. A telecommunications right-of-way user under Minnesota statute is defined as a person owning or controlling a facility in the public right-of-way that is used or intended to be used for transporting telecommunications or other voice or data information. This term does not include Cable Commission's systems. So that's important because in Minnesota state law, it talks about what a telecommunications right-of-way user is. If it's telecom, we do not get to franchise it even if we wanted to. If it's cable, we do get to franchise it. So looking at the state definition for a cable communication system, it's a system that provides the service of receiving and amplifying programs broadcast by one or more television or radio stations and other programs originated by a person operating a cable communications system or by another person, and then distributes those programs by wire, cable, microwave, or other means. These are not super helpful definitions, but it's confusing, and the reason that I'm going through this painful legal exercise is everything stems from is broadband/fiber, two words, I mean the same thing, cable or telecom. Is there a definition for broadband fiber? Not really. The state has created an Office of Broadband Development, and they define it as any service providing advanced telecommunications capability and internet access. So those are the definitions that we have to work with on a state level. So let's back up a minute and talk about what we have at the federal level, because what we get to do is going to be through the filter of the federal government, state government, and then it comes down to us, correct? So the Sixth Circuit has said that broadband is an information service and is not telecom under the FCC rules. So they have not identified it as cable, but they have said it's not telecom. So potentially this weakens the argument by broadband providers when they say we're telecom and therefore you cannot franchise us. This area of law is still evolving. We don't know exactly what FCC is going to do, but I can talk about some things coming straight out of Minnesota that are in front of the FCC for consideration right now. Minnesota statutes, it says explicitly in state law that we cannot franchise telecom, but we can franchise cable. We don't have any clarity around what we can do with broadband. So that's what puts us in this little weird gray area that we're in, and that's why this presentation is probably not what you were expecting this presentation to be. The city has an ordinance, and the city ordinance is in Chapter 10, and it states that essentially everything that goes into the right-of-way must be under a franchise agreement unless there is a state law or some other law prohibiting it. And that is, so we have franchise agreements for cable and any of the utilities that would be in our right-of-way. Enter the QCTV Cable Commission. The city is part of the Quad Cities Community Television. We have a JPA with that cable commission. That JPA administers and enforces all of our cable franchises, and their job is to sort of oversee the cable franchise-related issues. They are primarily funded by the cable franchise fees. Current cable franchise agreements. I'm including this in here just as an FYI. The franchise fees for cable have dramatically decreased. You can see it as essentially almost a straight line over the last several years. As people have changed from using cable to using streaming, the current cable franchise agreements do not cover streaming services. And so because of how people are consuming that media is overwhelmingly through streaming, the revenue is created by cable franchise is dropping significantly. I highlight this to note that this is another area of potential litigation in terms of something that the cable commissions probably are going to have to talk about. Are they going to try to make the argument that streaming is actually part of cable and therefore required to be part of a franchise agreement? Okay, so locally, what have cities done? The city of Woodbury has a franchise agreement with Intrepid. The city of Medina also has signed a franchise agreement with Midco. The Woodbury agreement is the most widely known. That is through the South Washington Cable Commission. These are the key terms that Woodbury has in their franchise agreement. It's a non-exclusive franchise, so in other words, multiple entities can come in. It's 7 o'clock.
We can always start a little late if somebody just wants to let somebody know there's an audience that will be starting just a little bit late. Thank you.
So
we just pick this back up here.
What do you think for time?
Whatever it's called.
So I probably have about another 5 to 10 minutes.
But we may have some questions. Everybody okay coming back?
Including the questions would be about 10 minutes.
Yeah. What do you guys want to do? I'm okay coming back.
I'm just come back to the light agenda.
What's that?
It's a light agenda.
Yeah. Can we pause it and come back? Yep. I think maybe there will be some technical questions about it.
100%. Yep. So we can table it until after the following meeting.
Real quick, input from Councilmember Olson.
At our last council meeting, we made a decision that I think was wrong, and I think I'm at fault. So I would like to make the motion in the meeting to approve the agenda with an amendment that we bring back for reconsideration. What was item 7-1 in the last meeting, the hiring of a part-time communication specialist?
So, Councilmember Olson is just letting everybody know that's his intent is to amend the agenda and add that back on for a new vote. So,